Apache from The Ventures here on KFJC, coming out of Tequila, Out of Limits, and Walk Don't Run, one of their classics, or some of their classics, actually. I mean, who doesn't know Tequila? And Jan and Dean did Dead Man's Curve. Oh, before I forget, broadcasting from Foothill College, it's KFJC, Los Altos Hills. The show is getting away from me, Mr. Phil Dirt.
Well, put a leash on it.
We're floundering at sea. So we've got tickets to go see Noki Edwards, lead guitarist of The Ventures, at the Rickshaw Stop on Friday night. Are you going to be there?
I cannot. I'm out of town.
Oh, well. It'll be a joyful occasion nonetheless.
He's a hell of a guitar player.
Yeah.
And a living legend, and he was a great writer, and he must be 842 now, but, you know, like Link Wray, right to the last.
That's right. That's right. I saw Link Wray not too long before he passed away.
So did I.
Yeah. But so for the co-presents, it's they're going to be playing, or he, Noki Edwards, is going to be playing along with Ventures Mania, which is Deke Dickerson and the Echophonics. Poyo Del Mar will be there, as will the Miniskirt Mob Go-Go Dancers. Are you sure you're not going to be going?
Positive.
Mr. Phil Dirt?
Yep.
Had enough of those mini skirt mob go-go dancers?
Nope,
in your heyday.
Else.
It's going to be at the Rickshaw Stop, which is up in San Francisco on Fell Street, 155 Fell Street. You do have to be 21 or older to win those tickets, so just keep that in mind. So tell us about Noki Edwards.
Well, he wasn't their original guitar player. He came along.
Wait, don't tell us who he played with, because that's who he used to play with, because that's one of my questions for the
I don't
giveaway.
Actually know. I haven't done any of that kind of research on
okay.
So I don't actually know.
But well, you'll.
But you do, right?
You'll find out, yeah.
See, there's always something to learn, no matter how much you think you know.
But go ahead, tell us about Noki.
But anyway, I was going to say, from my perspective, his period with the Ventures, and he's been on and off with them, has always been their prime. The music had more fire in it when he was playing guitar. Certainly the Japanese, whom just worshipped at the altar of the Ventures for a long time, Aleki was born out of the Ventures. Mm-hmm. They really kind of bowed to him more than anybody else. But really, really good phrasing, great accuracy. You know, he was never a ball of fire, but there was so much talent and liquid flow in what he did that it just didn't never mattered. So, great player.
All right, so we can expect a great show.
Of course you can.
Yeah, on Friday night.
But he's really a country boy. He liked country.
Okay, well, that's sort of a hint of our clue. Let's ask. Well, I've got a couple questions. We could go either way. You can answer, let's see, to win the tickets for Noki Edwards, you can tell us who did Noki Edwards play with, which country star did Noki Edwards play with prior to joining the Ventures? That's question number one. Or the Ventures had a big hit with their version of a TV theme song in 1969. What was that? What was the title of that?
I know.
So if you know either of the answers to those questions, or perhaps both, that would really put you on the list. It's 650-941-2500 if you and your friend would like to go see Noki Edwards, lead guitarist of The Ventures, along with Ventures Mania, Deke Dickerson and the Echophonics, Poyo Del Mar, and the Miniskirt Mob Go-Go Dancers, Friday night the 21st. I'll take the fourth. What color should we take? Number five, says Phil Dirt. All right, so take color number five for those Noki Edwards tickets. Listening to Jaws right now. It's Maybelline and KFJC.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have a winner for those tickets. Bonnie. Yay, Bonnie. From the 510 area code, won the tickets to see Noki Edwards by answering the question, the version of the TV song that became their hit. And, of course, it's Hawaii Five-O. Now, nobody knew the country star that Noki used to play with before joining the Ventures, including Phil Dirt. I'm very disappointed in him. But it was Buck Owens. Yes, good old Buck Owens. Noki Edwards used to play with him. All right, so I'll let you listen to Hawaii Five-O from the Ventures here on KFJC. Thanks for calling, everyone. The tickets are gone. We'll be right back.
everybody's heard about the bird. Bird. The bird's a winner. Well, a bird, bird, bird. Bird is a winner. Well, a bird, bird, bird. Well, a bird is a winner. Well, a bird, bird, bird. The bird's a winner. Well, a bird, bird, bird. Well, a bird is a winner. Well, a bird, bird. The bird's a winner. Well, a bird, bird, bird. The bird's a winner. Well, a bird, bird, bird. Well, a bird is a winner. Well, a bird, bird. The bird's a winner. Well, don't you know about the bird? Well, everybody knows that the bird is a winner.
Davy Allen and the Arrows. Here on KFJC with a little nod, tip of the hat to the hot rod culture of the time. Well, that was called Hogs in Heaven, but you know, a little bit of that motor starting up there.
Yeah,
we heard
Davy Allen, King Fuzz.
Also, in there was Johnny Fortune, a young Johnny Fortune doing Soul Surfer. Riptide came from the Majestics, and Jack Nietzsche did The Last Race. He was quite a character.
Yes, he was.
Mr. Gunslinging producer. not quite the Phil Spector level, but...
No, but pretty close.
Yeah, yeah. He got himself into quite a bit of trouble with...
Yes.
Do you remember her name?
No.
Carrie Snodgrass.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's why I don't remember.
That's
it.
Right. I don't know why I remember that, but... Yeah, I can't remember if he went to jail or what happened with him, but there was a little gun incident.
Yeah, there were a lot of crazy people at that time, kind of like now.
Yeah, I was going to say, some things never change.
It's the music business, right?
Also in there, Dick Dale and the Deltones doing Miserloo.
Uh-huh.
What do you want to tell us about Miserloo?
Well, what I've heard was Johnny Barraquette and the Vestels developed that arrangement of Miserloo, and they opened for Dick Dale a couple of times, and not too long after that, out came the single, so... one can surmise where the arrangement came from.
You know, we've got that right here, so perhaps we'll have to listen to that and see for ourselves. But he kind of, what you were telling me, he sort of had a history of that.
Yeah, there's a song called The Rising Surf by the Tandems, which was a demo that Al Hazan put together and gave to Dick Dale's manager in very early... Late 62, early 63, January or so. And Dick Dale and his manager, 3 or 4 weeks later, said, "Nah, we're not interested in this song." And then 2 months later, out came The Wedge, and it's the same melody exactly. So
sort of reminds me of Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. Well, and
maybe not that level, but...
Yeah, and Hazan's got a long history with it, because that's The Wedge is actually based on the break melody out of a song by the Bell Sisters from 1962. So, you know, it's got a long history.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, why would you take a song like that? But anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the history is so fascinating, because there's so many different elements that have come into surf, or kind of, you know, made surf the country and rockabilly and you know, other guitar hillbilly stuff.
Yeah, West Coast jazz was actually a big influence. Exotica, Martin Denny.
Yeah, well, we started with the Les Paul, which was the jazz.
Yeah,
release from him.
And you know, Mickey and Sylvia. You know, the really slithery blues guitar stuff. I mean, it's just a long strain of them.
Yeah, and I'm surprised by the big country influence. Not really surprised, but there is a big country influence. Like Lee Hazlewood did all that songwriting and stuff for a lot of surf.
Well,
surf
and what you find is, if when you listen to the voices when the kids are shouting in tracks and stuff, you'd swear they were from Arizona or Texas or someplace. You know, they don't sound California at all. And they frequently covered Chet Atkins and other kinds of country things like that. And they were a very strong influence. But the rhythms are not country at all, and that's what kind of takes it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what is it, pretty basic 4/4?
Yeah, rhythm? But with a very specific beat. If you listen to the snare is the main drum in surf, and it's bump 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 bump, that and that's it's in probably 70% of the surf instrumentals.
Sax is used a lot too,
sax and piano, not organ.
Something I played had a little bit of organ, but that was early stuff.
Yeah,
but you're right. Yeah,
the organ generally doesn't fit with it, because the music is very staccato and organ kills it. So like the Shantae's Pipeline, it's piano.
Right,
it's all about the piano.
Okay. Because the organ is too fuzzy.
Well, no, it's too long.
Oh.
The notes are long.
Oh, okay.
And so they drown out, they can drown out real easily, the staccato. Whereas the piano, if you take that mid-50s rockabilly rolling piano stuff, Jerry Lee Lewis and all that, that's where that came from in surf. And it's just the earliest use of electric piano.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of people we haven't talked about. One in particular is Al Casey, who I kept reading about. Can you tell us about Al Casey?
Sure. He was a studio guitar player. He developed the Joni Reynolds big guitar sound. The Endless Sleep influenced Endless Surf Bands. Pardon the pun.
You're talking about the movie Endless?
Yeah.
Okay.
No. And that guitar sound, he also taught Duane Eddy how to use. And that became the sound of Duane Eddy, but that was really Al Casey. In fact, some of Duane Eddy's singles were recorded when Duane was on the road. He wasn't even there. And Al played the guitar. It's just kind of that big guitar. It's a Gibson. It's not a Fender, but it's a big guitar, sustained, a little bit of tremolo, very rich.
You know, speaking of guitars, I read a lot about, like the Fender, the Jaguar, and the Jazzmaster, and, of course, the Stratocaster.
Yeah,
what's the allure of the Fenders and those particular types of
Very,
Fenders?
Very strong structures that you can play really big strings on. The classic surf string set is 58 or 60 gauge E-string. Yeah, it's like a bridge pipe, you know. It's just a huge thing. That's why they go through a pick a song, whatever. But lots of bass tone to them. Most guitars didn't have a lot of bass tone to them, and the amp certainly didn't, but Fender did.
Mm-hmm.
So everything was low and beefy.
Okay. And then the reverb. What actually is that? Is that on the guitar itself or part of the amp, or what is that?
It's among the first outboard devices. It's a tank. It's a box about a foot and a half long by about 8 inches square.
Okay.
With grill cloth, but there's no speakers or anything. And what it has in it is a steel pan with three springs. And they're driven at one end by, like, speaker cones and picked up at the other end by a transducer. And what they do is they cause a repetition and reflection of whatever passes through them. And they have a very, very unique character. When Fender later put them inboard in the amplifiers and changed the circuit, they lost their tone. It's just for about 3 years, that outboard box. That is the deal.
Because I read where somebody used to go in and cut those cones. Was it Bo Diddley, maybe, who'd go
in
and
the
cut
speaker
the
cones?
Yeah.
The earliest fuzz was done by that from the early 50s onward. Bo Diddley, Link Wray.
Mm-hmm.
There were plenty of others. What's his name? Johnny something or other. The train kept it rolling. Johnny Burnett. Those guys all slit their speaker cones to get kind of a fuzzy, raspy sound. Obviously, that's expensive because they beat themselves up and tear themselves apart pretty soon. You can't keep using them, you know? And there were other ways. Johnny Burnett figured out that because the tubes hung upside down in his amp, one worked loose a little bit, and when a tube is loose, it can create distortion. And so he used to do that and stop cutting his speakers. But up before the outboard reverb was attained basically with an acoustic chamber. You know, it was in the studio, but there wasn't anything you could do live. And the outboard came along at about the same time as the Fender Showman, 100-watt head with two 15-inch cones, gigantic, and the surf lead player would have two of those. So he'd have two twin 15s, two outboards, 200-watt heads, drive his guitar into it, and that's because they were playing in rented halls with no PA. You know, they had to hit the back of the room. So they were loud. They were the first really loud rock and roll band.
You know, speaking of Exotica, I think this is Yellowbird playing in the background.
There is, yeah.
It?
Yeah, and there's a number of surf versions of Yellowbird, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm pretty much winding up. Thanks for joining me. It's sort of an unplanned sort of thing.
Well, it's really nice to see you again. It's been an honor to be able to sit in and interrupt you.
Well, the honor was mine. I totally appreciate it because, like I said, I had tons of questions.
Well,
and
some things I know, some things
I don't. You'd be the boss.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to that we didn't cover? I mean, I know there's a lot, but anything specifically about surf that...
Just as a matter of overall perspective, it represents the first time that the kids, and rock and roll was always about the kids, you know, the kids took the music back from the record industry. In the early 50s, the record companies learned how to formulate it and create it in the studio and killed off the big deal. And what was on the radio just got more pallid and more pallid and more pallid. And then along came the surf bands. And they never did learn how to do that.
And so do you attribute anything specifically to sort of the I don't want to say downfall because it didn't really do that, but sort of the... declining interest in surf, like around 65? Was it political, musical? What do you think?
Well, it was a combination of things. It started with the British invasion, you know, which slowly took on power in 64. But there were surf bands still playing through 66 and into 67. And there were still surf instrumentals in psychedelic band sets when they would play live as late as 68 and 69 sometimes. So it disappeared off the radio. But it didn't exactly go away. It was real skimpy in the 70s, and then in the 80s, John Blair brought it back with John and the Knight Riders, and then from then on, it's just always been there in some form.
speaking of the British Invasion, who was it, the pyramids that used to shave their heads and then wear the beetle wigs on stage?
Yeah,
and then throw them. And then they had the girls throughout the crowd who would go wild. Then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's showmanship.
Absolutely.
Nice marketing, too.
Uh-huh.
Well, okay. I'm winding up. Pax Humana's coming up at 3. Poyo de Mar's here at 4. Your good friend, Ference.
I have my Poyo de Mar t-shirt on.
I see
on.
That. It's
one of my favorite bands on the whole planet.
With little tiki men sort of representing the early Hawaiian influence of surf, the Hawaiian royalty.
Poyo de Mar, chicken of the sea.
That's right. Yes. Yes. So thank you so much. And thanks,
you're
everybody,
welcome.
For
thank
listening.
You.
Pax Humana is coming up next, as is, like I said, Poyo de Mar, Cousin Mary. And she's going to be hosting the Tomorrow Man. And everything ends up with Sluggo. So thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. Congratulations to ticket winners. Stay tuned to KFJC. It's Maybelline.
Thank you. I'm screwed. I'm gonna go to jail, and I'll pay, and Johnny Utah gets his guy. Right? Good for you. That's real good. I'm gonna be a big hero now. But look at it, Johnny. Look at it! This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, man. Just let me go out there. Let me get one wave before you take me. One wave. Now, where am I gonna go, man? Cliffs on both sides. I'm not gonna paddle to New Zealand. My whole life has been about this moment, Johnny. Come on, compadre. Come on.
Freeways, man, is he hard to catch. Surfer Joe, now look at him go.
Dave flying down the road with 26 surfboards and a 100-pound load. I knew where he was heading, trying to reach the playground of the surfers, Doheny Beach. Surfer Joe, now look at the go. Surfer, surfer, surfer Joe, go man go. Oh, surfer Joe. He went down to Huntington Beach one week for the annual Surfers Convention meet. He was hanging five and walking the nose, and when the meet was over, the trophy was Joe's. Surfer Joe, now look at him go. Surfer, surfer, surfer Joe, go man go. Surfer Joe. Okay, let's go. Sam's Marines today. They stationed him at Pendleton, not far away. They cut off his big blonde locks, I'm told, and when he went on maneuvers, Joe caught cold. Surfer Joe, now look at him go. Surfer, surfer, surfer Joe, go and go. Surfer Joe. Keep him away. When the surf was up, he still had his day. They caught him at the trestle down by the sea, and now poor Joe is doing KB. Surfer Joe, now look at him go. Surfer, surfer, surfer Joe, go man go. Surfer